Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with the Kia 7-year warranty. Wherever the next 7 years bring you, Kia has you covered.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RTE.ie, there's been a remarkable reaction it began last Monday, wasn't it? Christopher Smith, he was on about something completely different, but he told us about his life in beginning. He was an orphan. He believed he'd no parents, and at 6 years of age, he was put into Artane Industrial School, and he was there for 10 years, not receiving any visit from any relatives because he had none. And that sparked a number of calls, and it sparked reference to a CD made by Danny Ellis, the musician, who was also in Artane, believe it or not, and he wrote this piece called 800 Voices. And then one of the songs was When Tommy Bonner Sang, and then I mused, was Tommy Bonner still alive or whatever, because it's a long time ago now, even though Artane didn't close till 1969. And then Tommy Bonner's sister got in touch with us from England, and Tommy Bonner was on the programme on Friday talking to us. I was just listening in, having a remarkable conversation between Danny and Tommy, and then we played When Tommy Bonner Sang, and it's an incredible song, an incredible story. Now, we were contacted by Pat Egan, the showbiz promoter, who's, by the way, 50 years in the business this year, even though he's only 53 and a half years of age. But Pat Egan, Pat, what's your connection with 800 Voices?
Joe, how you doing?
Good, Pat, how are you?
My connection is pretty simple. I heard the music at the time, and I felt it was possibly one of the best albums ever produced by an Irish artist.
Okay.
And you know, in creative terms, certainly up there with the very best of them. Okay. And I took it upon myself to put a show on in the concert hall with Danny, and it did reasonably okay.
Uh-huh.
But it still didn't highlight in the brilliance of the album. I felt that Danny was let down by the media here, the radio, who didn't champion the album and put it up there like they should have done, because it is a unique, an absolutely unique piece.
I think the only ability
on the album to be able to tell an entire story in great detail in 3 minutes is astounding. It's just absolutely brilliant. His lyrics are the best as well. So I didn't have any doubts about the quality of what I was pushing. We did do a lot of research into trying to get it up as a musical, but that didn't come off. The idea I had was to inject some of today's younger performers into it, people like Jack L and Christy Dignam and people like that in, and to put it on in Dublin. But the enormity of putting on a musical on the stage, a good musical in terms of cost, is you're looking at 400, 500,000 quid just to put on a musical in Dublin. So I did pursue it down a lot of different avenues, and myself and Stuart O'Connor, who runs Spotlight Stage School, were very interested in doing it. But it didn't happen, Joe, much to our disappointment.
And you optioned it, didn't you, from Danny? You said
we did. We had an option for 3 years. We paid him a worthwhile fee for the period, and I mean, people like Peter Sheridan and Paul Mercier and people like that had a look at it, and they came up with various script drafts or whatever. Danny wasn't overly happy with them, so we didn't make progress on that level. And it's a terrible shame, because it's such a wonderful piece in the way Danny injects. It's not when you mention Artane, people think you're going to get an album or a song which is full of grief and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And there is an element of that in there, but there's no bitterness in the songs. It's basically a 12, 11-year-old boy telling his story.
Yeah.
And, you know, when you're that age, you don't have that kind of humanus like somebody, but you don't hang on to a bitterness thing. And, in fact, on the whole album, there's only one song, Innocence Back, which Danny more or less takes his anger out on the Christian Brothers. So it's a wonderful piece of work, and it's still, I mean, certainly Artane you know, at my age now, is something that is very much a thing of the past, and but I don't think that many.
But Pat, you say you must remember Artane. You were born where? Dorset Street.
I was. Yeah.
You must have been.
And
like
I do remember it well. It was the kind of thing that was held over your head, Joe. If you got up to any tricks or in any way, you were going to be sent to Artane. Thank God that never happened.
Now that's an incredible story in terms of that you did actually. And when you say, you see, I remember, I think I first heard it on Ronan, played it, Ronan Collins, who I know you're a great champion of Ronan as well. But you're right, it didn't get the traction it deserved, I think.
Well,
is it too bleak, Pat? Is it?
No, it's very hard to take individual songs in it out of the context of what it's about, because they're not necessarily hit songs as such, although they're very catchy and they've got very strong melody lines, and the song like Tommy Bonner is exceptional song by any standards. But you need to get a feel for the overall album, and it's not, you know, it's really hard to get across to people that it's not about just Artane, and it's about the story of a young lad, any young lad. It could have taken place anywhere where there was a brutal type of reform school or whatever it is. So it could be, you know, it's not Oliver Twist in that sense, but it's a much more, it's very relevant to what went on here, and I'm sure in other places as well. And it should be, somebody should take it up, or RTE should take it up and do something very special with it, because it's so worth it, and it's such a great piece.
Great piece, and it's a historic piece.
We had people like Jim Lockhart out there in RTE. Oh. Jim was in Horslips, of course, and you had... I can't remember the girl's name now, in the Siobhan Long in the Irish Times. She wrote an amazing piece about it at the time. It got absolutely terrific reviews from everyone.
I know that.
But it just didn't happen. Like, that's the way it is in this business, Joel. Okay. Sometimes the best things are overlooked, and then you get other stuff put on and on the telly and stuff like that, and you wonder where they got it from.
But then people have to take, people like you, unfortunately, have to take a gamble, and you do, in fairness, you do push acts that otherwise mightn't get into the National Concert Hall or mightn't get into the Olympia or whatever. But then you push, I'm just thinking, if you said 800 Voices didn't do as well as you hoped it did, but the last, I know you're very good at coming out if there is any issues about concerts you run, but I think that before, we had a conversation about a year ago about something else, about the National Concert, but you do you remember the Julio Iglesias debacle? Do you remember that, Pat?
I do,
and you did come on, in fairness, you did come on. Basically, our listeners, he was on, where was he on? In the Three Arena, or the Point, or whatever it was.
Was he
as dreadful as our listeners were saying?
Well, it was just a long shot, Joe. They were asking for a set fee. They weren't looking for percentages. I think the fee was 250,000 quid or whatever.
Yeah.
And if I had sold the 9,000 seats in there at 80 quid a go, I'd have come home smiling. But sometimes these things don't work. Julio, despite the fact that he was a really good artist, he lost a lot of credibility over the years. And then when he came to Ireland, he wasn't a well man at the time. He couldn't stand up straight. Mm-hmm. When he was having his picture taken, one of his assistants had to hide behind him and keep him her arm around his waist to hold him up. So he was in a bad way.
And he didn't perform, but did he?
He did perform.
No, but he didn't perform for as long or as.
No, he didn't move on the stage. Okay. He more or less stayed leaning up against one of the amplifiers because he wasn't able to walk.
I'm sorry he was unwell, but a lot of people were upset about it. But Pat, it's a long time ago now, but I'm right in remembering that when I spoke to you the following day, I said, what did you say to Julio this morning? The morning, I presume you had to put him up in the Shelbourne or something. And you said, he's gone. He was gone by the time.
They had their own jet, which they flew in on, a private jet, and he brought his own fridge with him with his own wine in it, as I said, and he complained about, or well, his managers complained about the fact that the SUVs that we supplied for them weren't the right colour, and there was a lot of stuff like that. He had... he wanted to go to a fish restaurant, and we sorted one in Holt for him, King's District, I think it was at the time, and he had to speak to the chef in advance of leaving the hotel about the fish and whatever. So you had all those kind of rock star demands and things like that, which are part of what it's about.
Good God. But there are performers that you must have really liked over the years. Big names.
Yeah, I've been doing it for a long time. I mean, I'm not in that league anymore. It's a different world now.
I understand,
It's a very tough kind of world. But there's people. I was with Billy Connolly, thank God, for 40 years altogether.
Wow.
I did the very last show of his career as well, which he did in the Tree Arena about 2 years ago or a little over it. That was the last gig he ever played in his life. So it was a sad day, and I was still very privileged to have been with him for so long. And he was very loyal kind of guy. He always come back for the same promoter, and so it was good.
And did
I had a lot of very good times.
What was his entourage like? Did they
argue? He never had an entourage.
Oh, he never had one.
In all the times that I met him, that once he might have come or twice with his manager. Other than that, he'd arrive at the airport, come through the normal arrivals area, and be carrying a bag in his hand, and that was it. He never had anybody with him.
Wow.
So as he got a bit older, he might have had a driver then after that, or somebody that would help out. But generally, Billy just came. He stayed in the Shelver nearly all the time. He'd saunter down Grafton Street, down to the cigar shop or whatever, and walk around town with things. He was upset then when the selfies came in, because he felt he couldn't get any peace everywhere that he went. It was a selfie, as you probably know, Joe, already.
Thin Lizzy. No, I have a face for radio, Pat. You know that. Thin Lizzy, Billy Connolly, as you mentioned, Queen, Status Quo, Bob Marley, The Stranglers, with you two as support in Dunleary. Colin Wilkinson, the great Colin Wilkinson, the great Phil Coulter, Leo Sayer, Burt Bacharach. You brought them all in, but I know you're a great supporter of Ronan Collins. You encouraged Ronan Collins to sing, didn't you, to start using his voice?
Ronan was such a good singer.
You have a lot to answer for,
really, really good singer, and people are not aware of that. But
he
does
singer.
A Joe Dolan show, and there isn't anybody in the country who could sing Joe Dolan like Ronan.
I've seen that show.
That's saying
brilliant.
A lot, because Joe had a great range in his voice, and Ronan has that. So that Ronan Collins sings Joe Dolan is one of the best Irish shows going around.
And I remember you put Sonny Knowles back on stage, and gave him a great boost. And Pat, what's happening now for the rest of the year? Is everything gone?
Well, everything that we have is pretty much gone up until November. We did reschedule a couple of things for the concert hall, Richard Clayderman and Leo Sayer and stuff in September, October. We don't know if they'll still go ahead. We're hoping they are. After that, it's pantomime time, and we don't know what will happen there either. We'll just have to sit tight, Joe, that's all.
Okay, stay with us, Pat, if you would, please. Back after this, 5-1-5-1, my chance.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We're talking at the moment to Pat Egan, the showbiz promoter. We began the conversation because Pat contacted us about the pieces we were doing last week from that remarkable album written by Danny Ellis about his life in Artane and all that it generated in terms of Liveline and people remembering and reconnecting. And Pat tried to put it on stage, but it didn't. He feels it didn't get the support. He said it's one of the best Irish albums he's ever heard. Bill Flynn, you're listening to Pat Egan now. I was asking Pat then about who he loved, Billy Connolly, among others, and didn't like Julio Iglesias, but I don't think many people did when he came. Bill Flynn, you know Pat.
Hi, Joe. Hello, Pat.
Hello, Joe.
That's Bill. Bill is in the Regal. You ran the Regal Theatre in Clonmel.
That's right, Joe.
Okay.
Back in the 90s. And Pat brought Billy Connolly into the theatre.
Very good.
And he was such a gentleman to deal with from beginning to end. And then when I was in the concert on Limerick, I had dealings with Pat there as well. Mm-hmm. Never a problem. And, you know, if there were shows that didn't make money, Pat just paid up moved on to the next show. He stuck to his word and thorough gentleman.
Yeah, because, Pat, everything you do... Now, I know, on the one hand, we have two of the biggest promoters in the world here. Now, have me MCD, Dennis
very
Esmond,
so, yep.
And Peter Aiken, two of the biggest and the smartest in the world. And then we've, I know Live Nation, but they operate the Pint, the Three Arena and the Bar Gáis. But like you take gambles, but over the 50 years, have you, obviously you're still in the business in some shape or form, but there must have been gigs you lost on.
Yes, Joe, we're still running quite a lot of gigs or whatever. They're very much in the middle of the market. Well, we're not running at the moment, but we will hope to run them again. And generally, there's been gigs that lost a lot of money, of course, and then you're lucky as well, and you get some that do really well, and you get something that's new and hot before. But the business has changed now. The opportunities are not there. The artists are controlled by big companies, like you mentioned, Live Nation and people like that. Mm-hmm. The deals are very, very tight. The risks are enormous, and it's not enjoyable. That's where I'm coming from, basically. I don't have that kind of steely temperament that's needed to be to be a kind of tough guy in that business. So I'm quite happy with what we do. It's been very successful, and I am...
And is it true, I know you don't deal with them per se, but is it true some of the biggest artists in the world would take 80 or 90% of the door, so to speak?
Yeah, some of them take even more than that, Joe.
Wow. So how could a promoter make money out of that?
Well, the artists will come with the belief that they will sell every seat in the place, and if they're going to do that, why should they bother paying a promoter a lot of money? So that's the pretty much the way the thinking on that is. You have to put up a big guarantee based on maybe 80% or 70% of the potential gross, and take your chances after that. So you could be down to selling the last 200 or 400 seats in the hall to make your money.
Okay. That's an incredibly tight business. So incredibly, you would need to have the nerve. If artists take some artists, obviously the big names, but they would take over 90% of the door, so to speak.
It would. They take 90% of the net. In other words, after the bills are paid, whatever's left on the table, they will take 90%, 92.5%, 95%, or whatever, depending on the size of the artist.
Wow. And what's going to happen to all the small theatres around the country that were doing so well and were so important? You know, the ring, the M50 ring of theatres, the Viking Theatre, the Drift.
I don't think they'll open them again for a while, Joe. People that go to them probably won't go till we get an all clear from, you know, when certainly the over 50s, I don't think, and the over 60s will come out in the same numbers. You won't get 1,000 of them packing into the lobby in the concert hall for a while, I don't think.
Okay. Paddy, congratulations, by the way, on 50 years in the business. It's a fantastic achievement. It really is. And for all the entertainment, a lot of the acts would not have come in only for they trusted you and knew you over the years. So well done, and well done for supporting
you. Just
a lot of the smaller
before you
acts
go away. There, Joe, Paul O'Reilly at Dolphin, he still has that Danny's album available on Essential Music.
Oh, great. Tell us where you can, essentialmusic.com. Okay, we'll definitely push that. Pat, you're a great supporter and I'm so pleased that you have such a high regard for Danny Ellis's album.
Yes, very much so, and I still have, and I would still hope that somebody will come up. Maybe some of you lads out there might have a million quid to throw at it or whatever.
Okay. Pat, go safely to you and your family. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks indeed. That's Pat Egan, the showbiz promoter. Came on to talk about an email he sent me about our team, but we rambled, as we do, into other areas. 51551.